The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Kevin Werbach is Professor of Legal Studies and Business Ethics at the Wharton School and co-author, along with Dan Hunter, of the book For the Win, The Power of Gamification in Game Thinking in Business, Education, Government, and Social Impact, first published back in 2012, but recently updated. Werbach and Hunter are acclaimed to have been at the forefront of the development of gamification tools in business. In a revised and updated edition of the book, they explain that when used carefully and thoughtfully, gamification produces some pretty terrific outcomes for users in ways that are hard to replicate through other methods. What exactly is gamification and how is it profitably used? That's what we're going to be talking about with co-author Kevin Werbach. Professor Werbach, welcome to Author Spotlight.
Thanks so much, Mike. Glad to be here.
Now, my remembrance from a report I heard about gamification years ago went like this. Educators and other observers were marveling at kids' ability to become completely engrossed in video games and that they were tireless with their involvement in those games. They could go for hours on end and be completely captivated by them. And what they saw was exactly what educators have forever been trying to achieve in the classroom, and maybe to a lesser extent, employers have been trying to achieve in offices and factories and so on. And then came the bright idea that, how do we do this? How do we replicate this sort of gamesmanship in the classrooms of America and the world and in office spaces? Is that sketch that I just offered, is it accurate or did that land in foul territory?
It actually came from a number of different places. Games are as old as human civilization. You can actually go into the British Museum and see preserved bone dice from games that were played thousands and thousands of years ago. And even more than human civilizations, the notion of play is something that we find throughout the animal kingdom. And so it's been well understood for a long time that there is something motivating about games. Why do you play a game? It's not fundamentally because there's a financial reward. Now, of course, people gamble and people do things like that, but the vast majority of the game activity we see in the world, and this is across all cultures and for a long, long time, is about people saying, it's fun. I want to do it. I care about the game. And so this has been recognized for a long time. And there actually is also a long history in education, as you mentioned, but also in business contexts about studying how, in some cases, for example, workers create their own games. Their research sociologists did research on factory workers, and they would make their work into a game to make it seem more bearable. So there's that stream for a long time. There is research and writing and education for a long time. What happened about 10 years ago was that there was somehow this collective recognition that there was a thing here. And the thing got the name, for better or worse, gamification. And it was partly based on all that history I talked about, but partly based on the explosion of video games that had happened in previous decades. And even now, people still don't realize this. I mean, the video games are a $150 billion global market. This is many, many times bigger than Hollywood, for example. And Hollywood is now actually a big player in video games. And people would say, well, okay, why, look, this Angry Birds thing that was coming out, why are 100 million people spending their time on their phones, clicking this thing to shoot, birds into pigs or pigs into birds. I don't even remember. But there was some awareness that, technology, the internet, mobile devices, and so forth were amping up this phenomenon that had been around a long time with games. And then just, this sort of realization dawned on a whole bunch of people, that this was something that could be harnessed. And, you know, game design is not something where you just say, okay, I'm going to make something fun and poof, it's fun. It's an art and a science. And we've got, even just with video games now, 50 years of practice around what it takes to make effective games. So gamification coalesced around all of those notions. And the first edition of our book, For the Win, was really in this first phase where this was this hot topic. I mean, The Economist did a review of the book and they called it like, this is the new management craze. It's like, how do you make work into a game? And we were actually saying, yes, the potential is enormous there, but you have to do it thoughtfully. You have to do it systematically. It's not just that you sort of sprinkle in some gaming pixie dust and everyone's going to love what you're doing. So we were then trying to map out what this really was in a systematic way based on the research and based on the examples.
What about the definition of gamification? If you were to boil it down to just a single sentence, how would you define it?
Well, we do in the book. We say gamification is the use of game elements and game design techniques in non-game contexts. So there's three parts to that. One is game elements. And this the book goes into this in a lot more detail, but there are structures and patterns in games. So a simple one is point systems. Not every single game has a point system, but a lot of them do. And the points serve all kinds of different roles in the games. They're not just a way of keeping score. They're a feedback mechanism. And so there are, we talk in the book about 30 different game elements. There are these components that are widely found in games that then can get applied to other contexts. So you can give someone points for, you know, something at work. You can use a leaderboard or give people badges for things. That's a lot of these gamification applications. The second thing is game design techniques. And that harkens back to what I said before. Game design is a serious business. And it draws on psychology. The book talks a lot about some of the insights from psychology, including some of the more recent work in behavioral psychology, the sort of nudging work. That feeds into what makes people do things in game-like scenarios. But a lot of it is things that game designers have learned. So, for example, how do you understand players? Game designers think a lot about different player categories and how you create a game that either targets a particular kind of player. For example, some players care about exploration. They want to find cool new things. Some players care about winning. And some players care less about them winning than you losing. Different kinds of mechanisms will apply to different of those players. So that's one of the techniques we talk about in terms of game design techniques. And then the last piece is non-game context. This is not about just making a game that's fun, nor is it about, you know, creating some sort of virtual simulation. There's a related field called serious games, which is about, you know, creating these kind of, you know, your pilot that pilots the plane is going to use basically a game, a simulation of flying a plane to train themselves. But that's not about motivation. Gamification is about using these kind of motivational attributes of games in anything that is not necessarily a game itself.
Tell us about the current state of gamification and where it's making its biggest impact right now.
This is something where it's interesting. You know, we did the update of the book because, again, in 2012, when the book first came out, it was something that was widely talked about. It was this kind of hot concept. Now, not so much. And if you look at, you know, for example, Google searches and so forth, there's a lot less discussion of gamification. However, there is far more use and application of gamification. It's pretty universal, especially if you look at any kind of digital service or application, particularly in some areas like health, for example, health and wellness. There was a study done 3 years ago that something like 80% of the health-related apps in the Apple App Store were gamified. And you're seeing that across all kinds of verticals. Finance is a big one. We talk in the book about Robinhood as an example, a lot of what they've done is targeting this younger demographic, gamifying the investment process in a way that's been really powerful in terms of stimulating their growth, but also dangerous. And it harkens back to what you mentioned before about addiction. We talk about there are people who have literally committed suicide because they, you know, got so into this idea of speculating on Robinhood and essentially seeing it as a game, and then lost all their money that they really didn't have to lose. So the big part of the book is talking about some of these ethical and other limits on it. But that's kind of where we are, that basically you hear less people promoting the idea of gamification, but you go into, you know, almost any sector and you see example after example. And a lot of it is just sort of starting to become a standard design practice where companies are building systems. They say, oh, yeah, we want to motivate people. So let's use some of these techniques. Let's, for example, use the concept of streaks, where if you come back a certain number of days in a row, you get someone say, oh, you're on a 5-day streak onto this. What we're seeing is lots of companies using these techniques and not even knowing their gamification. Just saying, oh, you know, our competitor does this and it seems to work, we'll do it. Not doing what we are pushing for in the book and our other work, which is understand what that is, where that comes from, and how to do it effectively. Because again, just putting the elements in there doesn't automatically work. You need to really have a sense of the deeper patterns.
How much do you see of gamification in Facebook? And I ask the question because I see people post at times on Facebook, and it's kind of clear that what they're doing is trying to see how many thumbs ups or comments they can get. It's almost like it's couched in a way that it's that they're making it like a contest or a game.
Yeah, I don't know that it was intended as gamification, but certainly all of those, you know, social media tracking things function in a game-like way. What's interesting is we are seeing more things going the other way, where, for example, Twitter is talking about taking off likes counts on their tweets, because it perverts people fixating on those numbers as opposed to fixating on quality, and it can be exploited by bots and so forth. So yeah, absolutely. If you reverse engineer and look at why do big social media platforms like Facebook, or why did they get so successful? Sure, the game-like element is a part of it. But again, I don't think most of that has been Facebook explicitly trying to gamify it.
So if you were to be asked by people in the financial industry, specifically at RIAs, you know, we've got financial advisors and we've got our clients and we, you know, construct portfolios for them and so on, about gamification, where do you see some potential entry points? And you mentioned Robinhood, which was an excellent example there. A little bit different, though, because that's what we call fintech.
Sure.
But when it comes to working with individual clients and so on, do you see opportunities for entry points here where gamification can be brought to bear?
Yeah, I do see opportunities. And I know there have been, you know, some experiments here and there in wealth management in terms of thinking about using these gamified techniques for motivation. And again, probably if you look at most of the platforms that are out there, I would not be surprised if you don't find some gamification elements. You know, it's not, you know, the area that I specifically focus on, so I can't point you to, you know, concrete examples. But you know, my sense is that, you know, again, because this is just such a valuable technique, it's been explored, but I don't think anyone has really, you know, killed it in terms of deeply committing to thinking about how this could apply. You know, certainly in terms of investment opportunities, you know, firms that are successful in taking advantage of gamification, this is a great business opportunity for them. And so, you know, you might look to, you know, that in terms of thinking about which companies, you know, have the greatest opportunity. But no, beyond that, you know, it is something that, you know, we talk about in the book. You want to start with an understanding of these basic techniques, but the real work is beyond just saying, well, oh, gee, I could give someone a badge if they, you know, earn this, that they, you know, met this threshold, they did this activity, they, you know, they read this information, they, you know, they diversified their portfolio in this way. That, you know, that's a particular technique. But the real question is kind of having a deeper understanding of what you are trying to motivate people towards and how it all fits together. And so, you know, offhand, I'm sure there are probably more examples that I don't know about, because even, you know, for all the gamification examples that I've seen, I keep coming across other ones that I had no clue about. So I would suspect in that area there are many as well. But again, it really goes to that, you know, I think thinking about where there's a gap, where is it that people don't have the motivation that they need? Obviously, everyone wants to be financially successful, but then people make lots of suboptimal decisions. So it's really figuring out, you know, where the motivational problem is in that interim, and that's where gamification might be relevant.
You mentioned gaps, and I'm interesting you said that because I was thinking in my head, blank spots. Do you see some blank spots out there in society, business, government, you name it, where gamification hasn't really infiltrated, that is just ripe for it?
Well, again, it is there almost everywhere. You can find examples, but you know, the full potential has not been reached. And, you know, certainly any kind of major public interest challenge, whether that is, you know, health and fitness and wellness is certainly a big one where everyone, you know, everyone knows they should exercise more, but people don't. To things like climate change, where there's this kind of understanding that at some broad level, there needs to be behavior change. Not that that's, you know, the only element of a response, but that's going to be an element. And most of the efforts have not been terribly successful. So again, you can do that kind of analysis for most big public policy challenges. And those are ones where, again, we've seen some effort in this direction. There's been a lot of talk about what are called nudges, which, you know, again, comes out of the behavioral economics literature. And what a lot of those approaches miss, part of it is this understanding that you know, it's not just about understanding, you know, kind of economics and understanding cognitive biases, that, for example, people are more averse to losses than they enjoy gains psychologically. That's one relevant dimension, but the dimension about what makes people enjoy games and some of the mechanisms that game designers use are really kind of a whole different area. So that's one piece. And then, you know, another piece is, you know, sort of, again, you know, appreciating the value of fun that, you know, that there is something we don't, you know, when you ask people what fun is, they actually get flummoxed about coming up with more of a definition. But it's something real. Again, it's something that's very deep in human nature. And so I think that's part of the gap. We see lots of examples of gamification that are kind of flat. And they don't recognize that you can find something that people really can be engaged in. But again, it's such a horizontal technique that I wouldn't say like there's one gap. And similarly, you know, from what we've been talking about, it's not that sort of once gamification is used in this area, then it will solve all the problems. It's really about sitting down and thinking about how to do it in the most effective way.
You and your co-author give some space in the new edition of your book to the potential negative uses and effects of gamification. And I believe one of the examples is a social point system that China is using, where you can accumulate points if you are basically do what the party tells you. Don't cause trouble. Stay between the lines. For God's sakes, don't criticize a government or its leader. So basically keeping people in line and keeping a point system and giving people greater access to certain benefits within society because they have a high number. They've accumulated a lot of points. Do I have that accurate, Professor?
Yes and no. The social credit system in China is fascinating, and it's something that provokes this immediate negative reaction among people in the West about how scary it is. And some parts of it are scary, but it's really a much broader initiative from the Chinese government. And there's a whole bunch of different local social credit systems. There's not one score for everyone. It's kind of a misnomer that a lot of the Western coverage focuses on. But no, the idea of social credit is that you know, people can be encouraged to behave in a socially responsible way. And some of that we would agree with, like, you know, that people should be encouraged and rewarded to, you know, pay their debts and their court fines and their taxes to comply with the law, that people should be encouraged and rewarded if they take care of their elderly parents. That all sounds good. In China, it's illegal to criticize the government. And so, you know, they don't have a First Amendment. They don't have our kind of democratic system. So in China, something that is considered a negative is something that we would absolutely not want to consider that way. So I think it actually shows both sides, that one could imagine something like a social credit system in the U.S., which would not be nearly as top-down and government mandated, because that's not the system that we have, thankfully. But that kind of system that would, again, encourage pro-social behavior. I mean, we have this terrible challenge in the U.S. That there's a lack of trust interpersonally and in institutions, and we don't have the kind of community bonds that we used to have. A gamified kind of system could be something that reinforces those positives, but the downside risk is absolutely real, that system should not be used in some way to, you know, punish people and try to manipulate them into doing what the government or some powerful actor wants. So, you know, this is, it's playing with fire. That's true in any application of gamification. This is powerful stuff, and that's what's so great about it. But absolutely, we spend a lot of time in the book talking about it. It needs to be done with a recognition of what the dangers are.
What is the biggest misconception people have about gamification?
That it's just this kind of shallow set of what we call PBLs, points, badges, and leaderboards, that it's basically just the idea of you take something and, you get points for doing this stuff, and then, you know, you get 10 points, that's all it is. And that just doing that will be rewarding. We give example after example of the book that look very different, and even of systems that, for example, use points. Some of them are wildly more effective than others, because again, it's the elements are what you see on the surface. It's the, you know, the deeper structures that are really what matter.
How did you get interested? I mean, when did you first become aware of gamification? How did you become interested in it, Professor?
Playing a video game. I got involved in playing World of Warcraft, which is a massively multiplayer online game, back more than 10 years ago. And I started playing with a group of people in a guild in World of Warcraft who were game experts. They were game designers and they were scholars actually studying virtual worlds. My co-author, Dan Hunter, who's also a legal scholar by training, he was writing papers back then about law in virtual worlds. So, for example, if you spend 50 hours of your time building up the gold or the reputation in the game to get the uber super duper sword of smiting, all right, it's really, really rare and really hard to get. All right, then what happens if, like, someone else in the game steals it from you, which in some games you can actually do? Or what happens if the game designer, the company that runs the game, says, yeah, you know what, we're just going to take that sword out of the game. Poof, it's gone. Have you actually lost any property? Like, you actually spent your time and money and energy to get this thing, which is unique and valuable, and now someone took it from you. How does that matter legally? So he and others were looking at these legal questions, which I found really interesting and fascinating. But then playing the game, you started to see this richness of the social experience, much more than just focusing on winning the game. And then around that time, this kind of fad took hold of gamification as the thing people were talking about. And I'm a business school professor. And so I was really fascinated by all the aspects of the games as games. But then I saw something happening, which was an important business trend. And I realized, you know, no one is talking about this and putting the pieces together. The people that understand business and finance don't get games. And the people that get games don't understand the other piece. And so that was my aha moment in terms of investing in and building on my expertise. We wrote the book. I also taught a massive open online course, a MOOC on the Coursera platform, which is still available if you want to take it. 500,000 people around the world have taken this course that basically, you know, gives access to basic gamification techniques.
How would people access that course if they wanted to?
You just go to Coursera and search for gamification. It's just called gamification, and it's free. You can you know, pay to get a certificate, but anyone can audit the class for free.
Do you integrate gamification into your own personal life? Do you find ways to do that, just to make maybe even like laborious tasks more interesting?
You know, I don't do, there are plenty of tools and methods for sort of, you know, gamify your life. And some of them work for some people. I study them partly because, like, I know what's going on behind the curtain. I find them less useful for me personally, because it makes me, instead of actually having the experience about the engagement, I say, aha, this is that technique they were using. That's really interesting. And so with me, it's much more as an underlying design pattern. And so, for example, the course is a good example. I didn't think I was gamifying it. I actually wasn't trying to. But then I look back originally it was like one of the most successful MOOCs, not just in terms of people who took it, but completion rates and learning outcomes. And I went back and I realized actually I had gamified it, that the whole structure of the course was designed as what we call a player journey in a game. And it actually epitomized a lot of these design techniques we talk about in the book. So, yeah, I think that I think in game-like terms at a deeper level about how I structure my objectives in life and orient myself towards them. I don't find it as helpful to do the stuff where I get a badge if I achieve something. Again, different people are different kinds of players and respond to different sorts of things.
So let's finish with your giving our audience the six steps that you give in the book for successfully implementing gamification. Just as a broad brush, what are those steps?
Yeah, well, so we talk about this as the six D's. It's really the six steps to go through a design process around gamification. And briefly in order, they are: first, define your business objective. So understand what you're trying to do, or even if it's not business, even beyond business objectives. Have a sense of the outcome in mind. It's not just that people have fun. It's that you want them to do something that you have an interest in. Second is delineate target behaviors. What are the concrete actions that you want those players to take? Three is describe your players. And this ties into what I was saying earlier. They're different kinds of people, and people at different times respond to things in different ways. So understand, what is the audience of participants that are going to be out there. Four is devise the activity cycles. And this is really the core of the loop that games create, where there's some action and then that causes the user to do something that produces some result, which produces some feedback, which then in turn goes to the next action that happens. And over the longer haul at the macro level, there's this player journey. People start as a novice and eventually become an expert. So the fourth step is about thinking in those terms. The fifth one is don't forget the fun. This came out of when I was teaching gamification. My students would come up with all these, like, I'd say, okay, create a gamified proposal for something. And they'd come up with something which was very detailed. But I would step back and say, is anyone going to want to do that? Is anyone going to think it's fun? And they would say, oh, huh. Yeah, we really lost that. And so appreciating ways to make things surprising, to make things stimulating. That's don't forget the fun. And then six is deploy. Six is once you've spent the time to have this understanding of what you're going to do, only then focus on, all right, what are the tools I'm going to use? What are the specific things that are going to be involved in implementing this design? Those are the six steps.
So the title of that book again, obviously we've just scratched the surface. The title of the book again is For the Win, The Power of Gamification and Game Thinking in Business, Education, Government, and Social Impact. We've been talking with its co-author, Kevin Werbach, who is a professor at the Wharton School. That book is available, like all books these days, everywhere. You know where to find it. Professor, thanks a million for taking the time. I know you're busy. I know it's a busy time of year, really interesting stuff. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for having me.